I'm Harold Fisher. We're at the Reporters Roundtable talking about some of the top stories of 2016. My guests are Denise Rollark Barnes, publisher of The Washington Informer newspaper, and Keith Alexander, reporter with The Washington Post. What stories impacted you the most in 2016 and why? Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Before the break, I asked about the Black Lives Matter issue and the movement. Your thoughts on what has happened to it, or both of those, in 2016, Denise?
Well, I would just say that, you know, I think Black Lives Matter is going to continue to be as strong as it's as the community allows it to be. I mean, there's still a lot of push to support Black Lives Matter, but there seems to be, from FOP and others, a lot of pushback. And so as long as there are these continuous situations happening in the communities across this country, I think Black Lives Matter still has legs and will continue to be looked at as an organization, as loosely as it may be, to speak on behalf of Black people.
Keith?
You know, when this whole Terrence Sterling shooting occurred, we anticipated, you know, days after the shooting that we were going to see these rallies. And it took several weeks before there was actually something in the street. And as reporters, we were wondering just that. Where are the protests? You know, there were numerous stories that we thought, okay, when they released the video, and you know, this video was out there, when they came to the information that the officer did not turn on his body camera until after the shooting, it took several days, if not weeks, before there was actually any type of demonstration. And so it was a great question as to what's going on. I'm wondering, is it that there's becoming so many of these shootings, and these demonstrations are like, okay, well, we just got done doing one, and here's another one, and as soon as we sit down, there's another one. I'm wondering if there's a fatigue going on with these demonstrators. I'm wondering if people are just starting to get used to these shootings.
I think that's a valid question. Have we, in some quarters, become desensitized to, you know, to this kind of thing, where, you know, you could, you know, some could argue, well, you know, that's what they do to us. And so as a result, you know, what can we do? Our last caller said, you know, what can we do about it? And we've often on this program heard people say beyond just marching in the streets.
But the caller also said something that really concerned me, was that he said that young people are going to start going after officers, and as a result of these shootings. And I'm hoping that's not the case.
Well, we did see that in Dallas, Texas.
We did see that.
We saw that in Dallas, Texas. We saw that about a month or so ago, where there, whether it was coincidence or what have you, that there were police officers that were shot in Missouri, but officers shot in Florida and other states. And so, just like Denise said, you have Black Lives Matter on one side. You may have official FOP statements pushing back, talking about Blue Lives Matter. Mm-hmm. And then you have others, whether they be mentally ill or just angry or just, you know, criminal elements in some communities that are just targeting police officers. And there's this mishmash of this.
Well, one of the things that, I mean, of course, this whole episode of police shootings is not new. You know, this has been going on for decades. I remember not too back in the early 80s, hundreds of people marched with Reverend Fauntroy and others to Annapolis over the shooting of Archie Elliott, who was shot 27 times. His father's a judge by police officers in Virginia. They followed him there and killed him. And so we've had lots of these incidents over the years. And I think what happens is, yeah, maybe there's a period of when folks get sort of inundated and the Black Lives Matter movement folks get tired. And so you find that the more the demonstrations happen, the fewer there are that mm-hmm. are beginning to lead those demonstrations mm-hmm. until something really extraordinary happens again. and then people are activated to get back out there. Let's hope that this changes. One of the things we can say, particularly in the District of Columbia, it looks like it's beginning to happen in Prince George's County, where you have now new police chiefs or acting chiefs who are really working to change the dynamic between the community and the police department. There are things that are happening in that regard. And if that's trickling out into the community, although this incident did happen on Christmas Day. But I think that there's a bigger effort on both parts to change the dynamic. Will it change forever? It's been going on for too long, so I don't know.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Lawan calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Lawan. What's on your mind?
Hi, Harold. Thanks. Good evening to your guests as well. I just actually have a question to your guests specifically, since they are in the media. One thing I've noticed when reading articles about incidents that happened, even just in this past year, a lot of times the people of color are identified in very derogatory, very derogatory manner. Like, they're identified with being thugs or gangbangers or things of that nature. Whereas in return, their counterparts, and I can, of course, you mentioned the Dylann Roof case and how he was identified, mentally disturbed and all these, issues where people are more sympathetic or tend to be more sympathetic, or, as opposed to if you identify a person of color as a thug or a gangbanger or try to identify some derogatory history in their past, even the victims that have been shot or, people that we've marched for and protested for. I'm glad you guys are talking about Black Lives Matter, but I'm just wondering why that language is used, why that, because it tends to prejudice people off the break. If you tend to have a trial and you have this police officer on trial for harming this unarmed Black man, but you pulled up all this dirt about his background and who he used to be, then it tends to prejudice the jury. So
hold on, Lawan. You've said a whole lot, and I'll let our guests speak about that. But that last piece, and I've got to say this, and this is why, particularly as we're coming to the end of the Obama administration, you say, well, what does that have to do with anything? I think that. For Black people, when they watch the news, and I've been getting this since I was a kid, sitting down watching TV, in Southeast with my grandfather, as soon as we see that somebody has been killed and they have a picture or a suspect, and, if we see that it's not a Black person, then the first thing we say is, thank God it's not a Black person. Okay? And then we stop paying attention. Okay? And I think that, when we got our first Black president, more Black people paid attention, I would argue, to what was happening at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue than perhaps in the history of this country. And every slight was taken personally, such as whether they called Obama Obama instead of President Obama, because they used to call Bush Bush and Ford Ford and Nixon Nixon and Reagan Reagan. But, and so when we do those investigations looking into the backgrounds of suspects, we do it to Black and white.
That's correct. And we have to do that.
And we have to do that.
Because...
But Black folks don't care if they do it to the white guy.
Right.
Because they stop paying attention.
Right. First of all, a couple things that she said. As I cover crime in Washington, D.C., I cover crime in courts, and I have never seen the word thug or gangster or anything like that in any stories that I've covered. In any newspaper have I seen that. I think what she's referring to are TV reporters who are editorializing, who are actually on air talking about that. And I've also seen other TV reporters go on Facebook, on Twitter, and say, you all need to stop doing that. So I think it's more of a broadcast. No, not to get on you, Harold, but I think it's more
right.
That's a broadcast thing that people are doing to get ratings and trying to get people's emotions up for ratings on TV and radio. But in terms of the backgrounds, our job is to look at who is this person? Who is this person who was killed? Is this person is he a Boy Scout? Is he an executive at a company, or has he been in and out of jail for violent offenses for the last 20 years? And now the police are saying that he or she, a lot of she's these days, had a knife or a gun. Well, based on his or her history, that might not be impossible. And that's part of the reason why we bring in that information. A lot of people don't agree with that, but it goes to the painting the picture of who this victim is. We do the same thing with the officer. How long has the officer been on the force? Mm-hmm. Has this officer ever been involved in any of the other prior shootings? We have to do the exact, does this officer belong to any type of groups that might be considered prejudice or what have
extreme.
You?
Extreme. Exactly.
Right. So yeah. We do the exact same thing. We have to do background checks on the individuals involved.
Yeah. So I would always say to the black folks that when you're watching the news, watch with a critical eye. When you're reading, read with a critical eye, particularly those things that you think may not immediately impact you. Because let us just say that the woman who was just killed, Crawley. Mm-hmm. Yes, there's been a lot of coverage of this woman. She happened to be white, but she was also a woman. And what happened to her could happen to any woman on the street, no matter what her color. Exactly.
So I appreciate, well, before I go there, I want to say that it's good that we have Keith in the room because, mm-hmm. As we know, and I'm so proud of Keith Alexander for being a Pulitzer Prize winning journalist. So
with a paper that's got lots of resources.
Right. But he's still, and one of their resources is him. Right, you know, yeah. They're benefited by all that Keith knows and what he brings to the Washington Post. But I think that, you know, you're right when you tell your caller, and all of those who are listening, to listen and read with a critical eye, because we, when we do that, we do see what might be the subtle statements that are made that are prejudicial. I mean, we know, for example, and I see it often when a young person may be involved in a crime, if he's 14 years old, he still may be identified as a black man. Black male, I can accept. Black man bothers me until later on, you know, then they may give an age or something happens. Also, we all know, those of us, you mentioned, Harold, that you grew up, you spent time with your grandfather mm-hmm. in Southeast.
Yep.
Remember, every time a crime was committed, if it was in Southeast, but depending on where it was, if it was South, it could be Capitol Hill,
or it could be Southeast.
In Southeast, yeah. But mm-hmm. it would be called Capitol Hill.
Right.
But if it was in Southeast, then you know we knew what the reference was, and that was
east of the river.
Yeah. So you know we have to continue to call folks out on the carpet and let them know that, because sometimes writers don't always know. You have experience. New writers don't have that experience.
And that is very, very true. We had a new writer just recently who wrote a story, and the police put out a lookout for a black male wearing a T-shirt and blue jeans. And the reporter put that in her story.
Yeah.
And I'm like, are you kidding?
That could be you, because you were off and you just
right.
came to pick up your bag.
Right.
And you're
so
the
I yeah. contacted yeah, the so. Editor and they took it out because yeah. you're right, because there's new reporters who don't know. But mm-hmm. those of us who are seniors say, you know what, race or lookout, just because they're black, is not going to help in Washington, D.C. Yeah.
LaJuan, thank you so much. We appreciate it. I want to go to this issue about, since we're on this issue about crime, I think the biggest and most horrific story that we have seen is the crime rate and the murder rate in Chicago. More than 700 people killed by gun violence in that city. More than 4,000 people shot.
This year.
That is just amazing to me. And more than, 50 people shot over the Christmas weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. 12 people shot to death between Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. What is going on in Chicago? What is the solution?
Well, I would think, and I mean, I have family in Chicago. I visit Chicago. People who are from Chicago love Chicago, despite what's going on. And I know that, like the caller said before on the other issue, what do we do? And I think the residents of Chicago are also wringing their hands trying to figure out what do we do. I haven't heard much from Chicagoan President Obama about the issue. And, of course, President-elect Donald Trump has been very silent on the issue. But clearly, there are a lot of guns.
He's talked about the ghettos.
Well,
He expressed his concerns about the ghettos.
And he's also talked about guns. But there are a lot of guns that are evidently floating through the streets of Chicago, and no one's being able to shut that off. And you can't blame that on immigrants.
Well, you know, there was I hate to give a plug to New York Times, but I will give a plug to New York Times. New York Times did an incredible story in just last week where they went out and they talked to some of these individuals involved in these shootings. And they said basically they're bored. These are young guys who they have nothing to do. They've got guns. And this is what happens when you have young. These are the guys who are actually involved in the shootings. Got nothing to do. We got guns. This is what happens.
And when someone slights you,
bam,
you retaliate. There we go. I need to take a break. When we come back, more about the top stories of 2016. We're also going to talk about some of the greats that we lost this year. Stay with us. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our discussion about the top stories of 2016. Quickly, let's go to Troy calling from Brandywine. Troy, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Good evening. How are you all today?
Doing just fine. Hey,
Troy.
Great, great, great. I was just calling just to make a point. I never made this point. I know someone else probably has. I grew up in an area. Actually, I was born in Prince George's County inside the Beltway, through Lynn Road, and then, you know, later on moved out of the area. But even growing up, I lost a lot of friends. I lost more than a dozen friends. And people scream Black Lives Matter. None of my friends were murdered by anybody other than our people. So we could wave that rally flag all day long, talking about Black Lives Matter. It's not gaining any traction like it should, because you can't sit here and say, which is not okay for a brother to kill a brother, but as soon as somebody else does, it's a big issue. Meaning a police officer, meaning of someone of a different color. That's just like the N-word. Someone else says it, it's a problem. But our people say it's not a problem. It's a term of endearment, which is idiotic to me. I'm sorry. I may offend a lot of people. At this point in time, I don't really care, because right now, we have nothing to look forward to. And like you all mentioned, Chicago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Guns are coming in. Other states, you can go to Atlanta, you can go to Tennessee, go to a gun show. Buy a gun over a counter from a private person, no background check. They may ask you, you okay? You take that gun to Chicago, sell it for $1,200. You got your money. You're happy. You're done.
Okay. Troy, I've got to let you go because we've got to get to some other points, but thank you so much. Real
quick. Let's respond real quick, Troy.
Yeah.
Troy, you know, here's why Black Lives Matter even got started. And I definitely appreciate what you're saying. Black Lives Matter got started when officers or people who call themselves officers were involved in these fatal shootings and nothing was happening. And, you know, either they weren't being prosecuted or juries weren't finding them guilty. And as a result, people were concerned that these officers were not being held accountable for these shootings. That's why the movement actually began. It began because they wanted people, these officers who were in authority positions, to be held accountable. That's the reason for Black Lives Matter. So that's why that's a difference between what you were saying in terms of the Black Lives Matter movement with officers and what's happening on the streets every day between black men and women every day on the streets. That's the difference. And I keep bringing that up because people need to realize the origin of Black Lives Matter.
And people also need to remember that these police officers, the reason they are police officers is because they are tax-supported.
Exactly.
Police officers. So one could argue that this is a state-sanctioned killing of citizens and people that you're supposed to protect. But certainly that, you know, we've talked about that at length. Go ahead, real quick.
I just want to add, though, that what Troy is saying still can translate.
Oh,
because
absolutely.
When you're talking about
it's not
an
invalid point.
When you're talking about shootings that occur between black on black, but then there are no prosecutions. There's right. Unsolved murders. Mm-hmm. And Phil Pinnell, you're talking about local news in Ward 8, where, you know, we've got close to, I don't know what the number is, but it's a huge number of unsolved murders in Ward 8, which means, or in the community. And so somebody is responsible for finding who those individuals are who are responsible for those murders. And if the police can't do it and the community is not engaged, then somebody, like he says, is not getting the message that Black Lives Matter. Mm-hmm. So I still think it translates, even with police involvement.
Let's go quickly to some local stories. A lot of stuff happening in in the D.C. metro. Comment from both of you. Let us start with metro. Metro's a mess. There's no disputing that. Is it on its way to better days, or are we still going to have to go through a storm? Keith, quickly, please.
You know, I have talked to Metro employees who tell me that they don't even allow their own family members to catch the Metro trains. They are so concerned about the infrastructure. I would like to think it's going to be some better days out there, but as I you know, my colleagues say, you know, Metro is a story that keeps on giving.
Yeah.
Every week, every other week, there is something there. And I think the infrastructure is so far, the train has left the station literally, that they're trying to play catch up. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be very difficult for them.
Denise?
Yeah, I think the devastating impact of this is on those communities that are east of the river, Prince George's County, where public transportation is the greatest need, particularly as it comes to, as it relates to employment, because we are more dependent. Other places may have choices. They decide not to drive or whatever the case is. But many folks in that part of the community and that part of the Washington area have no choice. They need public transportation. And so I think there's going to have to be some kind of, there will still continue to be an effort to make sure that Metro provides equitable service in the region.
Two big stories coming out of Prince George's County. Deadly domestic violence this year started off horribly. We had children killed. We had mothers killed. We had mates killed. And also we saw big stories about sexual assault cases, particularly coming out of Sylvania T. Woods, probably a story that really got national attention. What does this say about public school systems? Is this an opportunity for Prince George's County to really pay attention? Is it for an opportunity for parents to pay attention? Because we know that there are sexual criminals out there. We know that there are domestic violence criminals out there.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, I'm glad that these stories are surfacing and that people are as outraged about them as they should be. Historically, these things have happened in the past, and it's unfortunate that they're continuing to happen. And I think there needs to be better education as well as better enforcement, you know, when it comes to the hiring of individuals that work for our educational institutions, particularly our young people. And this domestic violence is happening in these households where, you know, you have young mothers who in some cases have, you know, the baby's daddy or the boyfriend home alone taking care of the children. I mean,
and it turns,
you know,
tragic.
It's pretty sad. And not that, you know, we've got some great fathers and some out there and great parents out there. But still, you know, black babies matter.
Yeah,
you
me
know,
too.
And if that's if that's the message we have to get out, we have to understand what does that mean? Mm-hmm. It's not just a message, but we have to figure out what does it mean and hold people accountable.
Keith, I'd like for you to talk about something else local. Big deal. The new National History Museum of African American History and Culture. You could argue that we haven't seen this kind of popularity since the Air and Space Museum.
The Smithsonian people would agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
It has been overwhelming. I mean, there have been tickets that are already have been sold out for this museum through spring.
And they're free.
And they're free.
Yeah.
The demand is unprecedented. And even Smithsonian employees and executives have been overwhelmed. And it is an incredible thing, right? I mean, you know, I covered some of the opening. I covered some of the profile of one of the investors in the museum. And there was such an energy there, right? And people are still, they go in and they have to go back three or four times because you really cannot take the whole museum off in one day. But this is something, you know, that was started by President Bush, and you know, he got the ball rolling on this, and Obama was able to see it through. But Washington, not just Washington, D.C., the nation hasn't seen anything like this in years. And you say Air and Space. I mean, some people argue even long before that. Mm-hmm. They have just the demand, they can't keep up with demand. And people are coming, and wait till spring, wait till this summer. It's going to be chaos down there.
Well, I have something else, because we need to talk about some of the people that we've lost this year.
Only last week, I murdered a rock, injured a stone, hospitalized a brick. I'm so mean, I make medicine sick.
Muhammad Ali died this year, one of my heroes since I was a child. And, you know, I would argue that he really, you know, for generations, Denise, was, you know, the first black superhero. But mm-hmm. he was the real deal.
Oh, yeah. I mean, all the way until his final days, even when he could no longer box. I mean, when he made just awesome approach to the flame at the Olympics.
Oh, the Olympics.
I mean,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
All of that. I mean, people just are probably still in awe with him. And thank goodness there was a museum, the Ali Museum out there in, I think it's in Kentucky.
Louisville.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was there before and will continue to carry on his legacy, and folks can come and visit and hopefully give the support to that museum. But I think one of the biggest losses. We've had some really big losses this year.
And this one is for you, Keith.
I never meant to call you.
Loss of Prince was just devastating for black folks, for white folks, for music, for Hollywood, just for everybody.
You know, it was. But let me. You know, yes, losing Prince, but for me, losing Vanity, losing Denise Richards, otherwise aka Vanity, that really, I'm sorry, Denise Matthews, excuse me, that really hurt me, because, you know, I had Vanity posters growing up in my bedroom and driving my mother crazy because how Vanity was dressed. And so for me, it was Vanity. Then how many, about 4 or 5 months later, we lose Prince.
Yeah, we lose Prince. Yeah.
And how is that possible? I mean, but we were fortunate, though, just last summer, the National Association of Black Journalists had a convention in Minneapolis, and Prince invited us out to Paisley Park. So got to see him up close and personal at his home. And then this happens. I mean, there were editors at the Washington Post, and the word went out, don't go near her desk. Don't go near the desk, because they're in mourning right now. When the news came across the AP wire that Prince died, there were people saying, don't go across Nixon so-and-so's desk, because right now they're in mourning.
Well, I got to tell you, you know, it was such a huge deal. And I think the thing that is going to be interesting to see in 2017 and beyond is what we hear from Prince. What is in that vault? I feel that we're going to hear some of that music. And he could be as big as, if not bigger than, Michael Jackson.
Harold, I just want to throw out a couple of other names.
Real quick.
Christopher Berry.
Yes, of course.
Glenn Eiffel.
Yes.
Who we just recently lost. And Maurice White with the Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Yes, indeed.
And our very own Mickey Thompson, people that remember her from social sightings here in Washington.
Tommy Ford from Martin.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Tommy Ford, right.
So much to talk about, and looking forward to 2017. I'm sure there will be plenty of news to cover. Denise Rollark Barnes and Keith Alexander, thank you so much, and Happy New Year to
both
of
you.
Happy New Year, brother.
That is the day.